Hello, I'm Hugh Remington. Welcome to the Roundtable. Now, over the next few months, every Australian will face a decision. It'll affect your healthcare for the rest of your life. And if you don't care about it at all, don't worry. The decision will still be made. It'll be made for you. For years, governments of both stripes have been trying to encourage us to have all our personal health records centralised into a digital database. Any doctor who deals with us will be able to quickly see, at least in theory, our medical history, any complicating factors we might have forgotten about, or perhaps because of a medical emergency that's befallen us that we are not able to declare to a doctor treating us. Now, in theory, it makes excellent sense. It brings our healthcare, like every other aspect of our lives, into the digital age. But we've been very slow to opt in to the system. There have been concerns expressed about privacy and also about the clunkiness, the inoperability of the particular model that is being built. So now the government has changed the rules. By October this year, unless you've taken the trouble to opt out, you will be automatically included in the system. Let's find out a little bit more at the round table. Our guests are Dr. Link Thurecht, the Senior Research Director with the Australian Healthcare and Hospitals Association. Dr. Nathan Pinskier, who chairs the Expert Committee on eHealth at the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners. And Dr. Catherine Kemp, a data privacy specialist at the University of New South Wales and a member of the Australian Privacy Foundation. Hello to all of you. If I could start with you, Dr. Pinskier, should all Australians, in your view, be signed up to this My Health Record?
Well, Hugh, that's a good question. The system was designed and implemented in 2012, and it was designed as an opt-in system. What we've seen over the last 6 years is approximately 5 million Australians have now opted into that system. Ultimately, it gets down to a personal choice as to whether one wants to participate or not, but I think there's a very strong argument to say that in the 21st century, is it optimal to be running a healthcare system and transferring information based on memory, faxing, mail, and other forms of communication? Numerous coroners have reported on the fact that the healthcare system lags behind the digital systems implemented in other forms of industry, such as banking and telecommunications. We can do a lot better. I think it gets down to when you're sick, you expect your healthcare provider to have access to your information, and currently that's not the case always.
And so when you talk about coroners commenting on it, coroners comment on things generally when people have died. So I take it that by implication, there is a sense that the current system, the non-digitized system, is not working for us, that people are dying.
It works to a point where you have regular communications between regular healthcare providers. So, for example, if you're my patient and I'm your GP and I send you to see a specialist, I'll generally get a letter back and that's reliable. But if you have healthcare outside of your normal ecosystem, so it might be in a rural setting or after hours, quite often that information that's collected at that time is not available to another treating practitioner. It gets lost in a silo. And I think the intention of this system is to make healthcare information available at the pointy end to providers who don't normally receive it by their normal communications channels.
I notice at my local health clinic, when I turn up there, it's a busy part of Sydney, and I don't think I've ever seen the same doctor twice. And, you know, because they're busy, if you want to get an appointment at a particular time, you get passed off to another doctor. And under those circumstances, unless they're going to take a full medical history each time, things are bound to fall through the cracks, aren't they? Unless you've got some sort of centralized information.
Well, in a medical center, certainly in my practice, we have an electronic system. We've had it for a number of years. So whilst we encourage you to see the same healthcare provider, that's not always possible because people are working increasingly part-time. We do keep your information in our system, so we should have continuity of care. However, we are trained to ask the same questions. We want to validate what we see on the screen. It's not just about the information being there and trusting it. We validate. So you will get asked questions more than once. However, if you've gone to hospital and a discharge summary doesn't turn up in my practice, it's fantastic to be able to log on to a national system and to be able to pull that discharge summary down.
Okay, so you represent GPs in the mix. If I could go to you, Dr. Thurecht, from the Australian Healthcare and Hospitals Association, you're really representing those at the hospital end of it. How vital is it, in your view, or beneficial, that people have this My Health System record?
I think there's probably two questions that's wrapped up in that. The first one is what is the value of having the My Health record? And I think that Nathan has talked about the benefits of that very well. But then the second question is the control that individual consumers should have over their own healthcare information. We've seen over the past couple of years with an opt-in system that there hasn't been a lot of buy-in to want to create it. But I think importantly, moving to the opt-out system, the government is giving consumers a three-month window in which they can choose to not have participate in the My Health record system, and indeed to be educated about which items of information that are recorded there can be viewed by which health professionals. But I think also an important element of that is providing appropriate information to consumers so they understand the value to them of having My Health record created.
So what happens at the moment? If someone turns up at a hospital, do the doctors working that hospital, particularly if there's an element of urgency to it, do they currently, unless they've been one of those 5 million who have opted in already, do those hospital doctors find themselves often hamstrung through just sheer lack of knowledge? They have to do a bit of guesswork, particularly if the patient at that stage is not fully coherent?
Well, indeed, if the patient's medical records are not available, if they're tied up in the general practitioner's office, then they won't have access to that information. So that's a good example of how better care can be provided to an individual consumer when their healthcare is the history of their healthcare is consolidated in one source. And I'd also point out that at the AAHA, we represent more than just public hospitals. We also represent providers in the primary healthcare space. Community health service providers, primary health networks, primary health providers, and individual health care professionals. So we're very conscious of the need for interoperability of data across different healthcare settings, so the capacity to share data across settings.
Okay, I want to get to the issue of interoperability in just a moment, but the issue that is so often raised is the one of privacy. Dr. Catherine Kemp, you're a data privacy specialist at the UNSW. What concerns do you have?
Good morning. I've got three main concerns about this scheme. Firstly, as I'm sure you're going to come to shortly, the My Health record currently does create quite limited benefits for Australians, particularly with regard to the clinical utility of the record. Secondly, that the scheme creates unacceptable security risks for some of our most sensitive personal information. And thirdly, very importantly, that we have not been asked to participate in this scheme. So the consent mechanism for this scheme actually flies in the face of global best practice for informed consent.
When you say that we've not been asked, are you talking about the Privacy Foundation, or are you saying that we as citizens have not been asked?
We as citizens have not been asked. Given that this is currently an opt-out system, we're not being asked for our approval or consent to participate in this system. Instead, the default position will be that we will all be included in the system if we don't understand and become aware of it and make a choice for ourselves. The default position will be that we are participating. And that's very important to bear in mind, especially because if you later decide that, in fact, the security risks are too great and you do not want to be part of this system, you cannot ask the government to then delete your record. The government will keep your digital record as part of their system for the rest of your life, plus 30 years. So it's very serious that this is currently being put forward as an opt-out strategy.
I'm also interested in things like in person's full medical history, all kinds of things might be in there that people feel was maybe an awkward or embarrassing part of their past. They might have mental health issues. They might have had suicide attempts. They could have had a drug addiction, a termination. They could have had sexually transmitted diseases and all kinds of things in there that you think, well, you know, sure, I had to get some medical help, but this is not something I want to be there on a database forever. Is that, do you think, a significant part of people's reluctance to cede this kind of sense of control over the information?
Absolutely, and rightly so. We In data privacy regulation, generally, we recognise that health information is a particularly special category of sensitive information for exactly those reasons. It's very intimate information and it can be used against people to their detriment, whether by humiliating them or discriminating against them, excluding them. And that's why it deserves special treatment when it comes to matters of security, but also consent mechanisms. As I mentioned, this consent mechanism at the moment of opting out goes against our own Commonwealth privacy regulators' guidelines on how consent should be obtained for this kind of information.
Okay, I understand, Dr. Nathan Pinsky, that you will have as a patient, as a citizen, a right to determine what goes into that e-health record. Is that true?
Absolutely. So consumers have a significant amount of control, and the control starts in the current model. You can choose not to opt in. In the period, the opt-out period, which runs for a 3 to 4 month window, there will be a significant awareness campaign, and during that time, you'll be able to express an opt-out. And if you opt out, no record is created. If you choose to stay in the system, and that's for the other 20 million, and at a later point in time you choose to opt out of the system, you can cancel your record.
But as we've just heard from Dr. Kemp, you can cancel it, but it stays on the books. You don't get new additions to it, but it stays on the books.
So let's understand what your rights are. When you establish a record currently and going forwards, there's a principle called standing consent. So standing consent essentially means allow any healthcare provider that's involved in my healthcare to access my healthcare information. You can also instruct a healthcare provider or the organisation not to upload information. So I sit on the board of a public hospital in Melbourne. When patients come to our hospital, the conversation's around, do you want this episode of care uploaded? If the consumer says no, then nothing gets uploaded. If you don't want your Medicare data uploaded, nothing gets uploaded.
Or doesn't that limit data. Part of it? I mean, if your issue has been, for example, an addiction history or a mental health issue, isn't that perhaps, to make the whole thing clinically usable, important?
So, look, certainly clinicians say that. Clinicians say we think everything should be up there. Consumers say, well, we need to be able to control what goes up there. So it's a balancing act. And what we say as a college is, what you see that's up there needs to be validated, but what you don't know is up there, you need to ask about. So the question I normally leave with at the end of a consultation, is there anything else that you're coming that in your healthcare that I need to know about in your health history that may be relevant? People choose to disclose what they choose to disclose today. The electronic record is a reflection of current practice, no more and no less.
Okay, we're getting a lot of messages coming into us on this subject matter. It seems to be ticking a lot of concerns for people. There's one here, I don't have a name on it, but the questioner says, I'm always concerned about these centralized databases that over the long term, a government in the future may make the information available to organizations outside of healthcare providers, for example, for research or for insurance. That's true, isn't it, that for research at least, at some stage, this data will become of a vast database for medical research purposes?
Yeah, so the government approximately a week ago announced the framework for the secondary use of data. There are very strict controls around the secondary use. It will be overseen by a separate organisation, the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare. Consumers will be able to opt out should they choose not to participate in that process, and insurance companies will not have access to the data. One of the things that we as clinicians said is that if it becomes a tool that's used for surveillance or compliance, we would not be keen to participate. And that's a conversation we've been having over the last decade. So My Health Record, we see it as a way of improving the way that health services are delivered and improving the way that health outcomes occur. It's not designed to be a surveillance tool.
So a question that's come in from Jennifer in Canberra wants to know how you opt out. Catherine Kemp, do you have any thoughts on that?
That's a process that I've been attempting at the moment. You do have to go to the website of the Digital Health Agency. And at the moment, you can only register your interest in opting out by providing your email address. At this point, you can't do anything about it. I believe that it must be at some point that the government plans to contact those who have registered their interest in opting out, but it's not clear at this point. There seems to be a process involved, and this is part of the problem, because with the opt-out mechanism, it means that we are taking advantage of the fact that the default position for patients will be that if we don't understand something or if we're not aware of it, we will do nothing. And in this case, doing nothing means exposing our most sensitive personal information to very significant security risks. And that's an important reason why the opt-out mechanism is entirely inappropriate.
There's some practical issues as well. This is the roundtable on RN. Welcome. We're talking about e-health. There's a message here that's come through from someone called Paul. I won't give the surname in this circumstance, but Paul says the e-health record is good and is used by my GP clinic, but not by any of the specialists that I have used over the last couple of years. They were not interested when I questioned them or said it cost too much to set up and they didn't have the time to input the data. Dr. Link Thorecht from Australian Healthcare and Hospitals Association, is that part of the problem, that as this comes on, this is an extra significant load, surely, on everyone involved in trying to make people better, is this process whereby things get uploaded, and particularly where individual patients are saying, well, I don't want that bit in, or you can put that bit in, but not this bit in. This is, in practical terms, quite a heavy load, isn't it?
Well, indeed, we are moving to a situation where for individual consumers it's going to be opt-out, but for healthcare providers it's in fact an opt-in system. So we do have information from the Australian Digital Health Agency of a little over 11,600 healthcare provider organisations so far have registered the Australian Digital Health Agency. But I would make a couple of observations about the things that have been discussed here. Of course, security of this very sensitive data is paramount. There's no doubt about that. But once the records have been created, the individual consumer has a lot of control about what is seen and what is retained on there. And indeed, they can actually remove clinical information from the My Health record, and they can control who can and who cannot view the information on the My Health record. And in relation to the secondary use of data, individual people can also say whether they're willing to have their data released as part of that or not, so they'd have that control. And then that brings me back to the key thing that there needs to be awareness and understanding about this, but there also needs to be a recognition of the appropriate health literacy to make informed choices around this matter.
You said something there, Dr. Thorecht, which is really interesting to this process. One is that you say it's effectively the effort by the government is to get everybody onto this list. So you've got through this process of opting out, and that's fine. But by and large, most people probably won't. But doctors themselves opt in. Mm-hmm. So even if we've got 25 million Australian citizens in an ideal world, according to the administrators of this system, opting in, it's entirely up to doctors as to whether they bother to be part of it at all.
That's true. And the statistics that the Australian Digital Health Agency are interested in that they identify around 6,400 general practice organisations have registered and over 800 public hospitals and related health services. So they're probably two of the largest providers of healthcare services, which are largely on board. But of course, the health system is more than GPs and hospitals. And the more holistic view we can get of a person's healthcare, the greater the kind of benefits from having this consolidated view of a person's health can be realised.
The other thing which has been raised is this question of the operability of the system. And in fact, the suggestion is made that the way that records are kept are incredibly clunky, that many of them are put on PDF files, which are not searchable in a simple way. Dr. Nathan Pinsky, is this part of the problem, that even if you get everyone opting in and so all these files are being uploaded somewhere or other, that it's actually not very useful for a GP when it comes to actually trying to search it or find out something that's important?
Yeah, look, so this has been a challenging and complex technical conversation that's occurred over the last decade. There are a number of different ways by which you can upload information up to a national record. The choices have been made around the simplest ways of being able to move data, which is using a PDF. Now, in the long term, that's not ideal. There are other forms of documents that actually contain structured data. We call it atomic or searchable data. Increasingly, over the next decade, we'll expect that most documents will move to atomic data. But that gets back to your earlier point. It actually requires everyone in the healthcare system to be connected, to have a computer. And quite often, I think it's a challenge when we have a slightly disconnected world. You go and see a specialist, and unfortunately, a number of specialists still use pen and paper, 8-inch by 5-inch cards. And you go into the consulting room, and you wonder how it is that they can actually retain all that information. General practice moved away from that years ago. Hospitals are now increasingly becoming electronic. You'll find across the country, most hospitals are now moving to full electronic records. We need the whole system connected. Once it's connected, we can then start to move the trains between the stations and then get the passengers to their homes.
Isn't this something where you've got to get the trains and the stations, the infrastructure essentially worked out before you go through the exercise of telling people?
Standardise the rail gauge, absolutely. So we've had a lot of conversations around how we standardise the rail gauge. And again, because we're coming from a let a thousand flowers bloom environment with lots of bespoke solutions, vendors are understandably reluctant to move from a system where they have market share. So bringing people together and getting them to play in a agreed environment takes a bit of work. We are slowly moving down that path.
We're getting a lot of responses here. Someone called Carol has texted in to say, my partner had information in his file which was not his, and we didn't know about it until he was in ICU. Another listener has called in, concerned about what this listener, I don't know, male or female, describes as creep, saying that this will expand beyond doctors, etc., to public servants and police, mm-hmm. who, when pulling you over, can check your mental health or addiction record. Is that a concern of yours, Dr. Kemp?
Yes, I think it's really important that we understand the security risks that I've been talking about here. There are extra purposes for which this information can and will be used. One of them is law enforcement purposes. We've mentioned research already, and there are risks related to the research and also to health apps, which is another purpose mentioned in the privacy policy of the My Health Record. This privacy policy, by the way, runs to 12,000 words. And if you read it, it indicates, the government actually says, that this My Health Record system brings risks from the transmission and storage of our sensitive personal information. And the government is quite right about that. We've seen these health data breaches in Australia and overseas are increasing, and the system itself, I can explain, also creates unacceptable risks to this sensitive information of ours.
I want to sort of argue, there's a strong sort of feeling, certainly in the messages that people are coming, sending through to us now, and an absolute welter of deep concern about this whole idea. Against that, I happen to be allergic to penicillin. If I was to wind up somewhere in an incoherent state, it wouldn't be obvious to anyone that I have that allergy, and it could potentially be life-threatening. Would having an e-health record under those conditions potentially save my life, Dr. Pinsky?
Absolutely. So the system has been designed where consumers have controls around who has access at an organizational level or at a document level. If you end up in an emergency department in an incapacitated or incoherent state, there is a principle called break glass, or emergency access, where a clinician can evoke emergency access. And if the record clearly says that you're allergic to penicillin, under those circumstances, having read it, you wouldn't be given penicillin. And if that avoided an anaphylactic reaction and an avoidable harm, that's a great outcome.
So we've heard from coroners who are concerned about the lack of this sort of record, which plainly suggests that people are dying because there's a lack of communication between different systems. Do you know, Dr. Kemp, whether there is any record, any criminal history, any other indications that suggest that this information does become a tradable good that is getting used in some sort of nefarious way?
Oh, certainly. That's one of the key concerns here, is that health data breaches are increasing around the world, partly because by digitising our records and allowing online access, we're increasing their accessibility for criminals and those who would misuse the data, but also because health records are so valuable. They're a huge prize for hackers because they fetch such a high price on the dark web. essentially they include so much of our personal information that they can allow identity theft and permit somebody else to essentially become you. And it's on that background that the government is introducing this scheme to create a central digital record of our personal healthcare information. And it won't be just your doctor who has access to that. As computer scientists have pointed out, the sheer number of people who will be given access to this data, doctors, pharmacists, nurses, staff, by default, makes it almost impossible to keep it secure in this system. And all of those people ultimately are fallible, corruptible human beings. So it's a very broad scheme that we're proposing here, and that's before we even get to the research purposes or the health apps.
Now, there are a lot of people asking, people saying that they're not on the internet, how do they opt out? These are things that we probably haven't got time to try to explore to their full degree, but we would hope that the government will make this information, we'll certainly circle around to it. If they don't, we have until October to try to resolve some of these questions. There will be a 1-800 number. Okay, that's useful. Thank you, Dr. Pinsky. So I wonder if I could ask in relatively simple terms, Dr. Pinsky, I'll go round the round table. Will you be opting in, or that is to say, not opting out? And would you be urging others to do the same?
Yes, I already have a My Health Record, and I've been encouraging my friends and my patients for the last 6 years to establish a record. Look, I certainly hear and understand the security concerns. We need to ensure that we have very strong and robust security protection within our local organisations and also at a national level. I think just to reassure people, as far as I'm aware, there has not been one successful attack on the My Health Record system. That's not to say it won't occur. People share passwords, things happen, and there will be certain potential adverse consequences. At the end of the day, though, this is a balance between will it result in a significant improvement in the way that we deliver health and improve healthcare outcomes and improve quality and safety? And I think the answer over time will prove to be yes.
Okay, we're almost out of time, but a quick opt-in or opt-out. Dr. Link Thurecht, what would you be doing?
I already have a My Health Record, and I'm happy for that information to grow. I think your example of being allergic to penicillin is an excellent example of weighing up risks and benefits. And some of the questions that have been coming in from your listeners highlight the need for the government to better communicate what's happening with My Health Record, the control they'll have over that data, and what the data will not be possible to be used for, such as by police. The legislative framework does not allow for that.
Okay, Dr. Catherine Kemp, opting in, opting out?
I'll definitely be opting out. Importantly, the government is not promising that this will be an up-to-date, comprehensive record that can be used for clinical purposes in all of these cases, and it is not promising that it can keep our most sensitive information secure.
All right. Well, this is, I feel, almost the start of a conversation, even though, as Dr. Pinsky says, this has been going on since 2012. There is still a lot more talk that's required before this deadline hits us in the end of October if we want to opt out from it. I want to thank our guests at the round table today, Dr. Nathan Pinskier, the chairman of the Expert Committee on eHealth at the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners, Dr. Link Thurecht, who's senior research director with the Australian Health and Healthcare, I should say, and Hospitals Association, and Dr. Catherine Kemp, a data privacy specialist at the University of New South Wales. She's also a member of the Australian Privacy Foundation. Some varied views on the issue of the new My Health Record. This is RN. Thanks for listening.